He sat down in his rolling chair, placed his file on his desk. Summer closed his door and leaned on it. I stood in the middle of the floor, with the crowbar hanging in space. We all looked at each other, waited to see who would make the opening bid. Carbone was a training accident, the doctor said, like he was moving his first pawn two squares forward. I nodded. No question, I said, like I was moving my own pawn. I'm glad we've got that straight, he said. But he said it in a voice that meant, can you believe this shit? I heard Summer breathe out, because we had an ally. But we had an ally who wanted distance. We had an ally who wanted to hide behind an elaborate charade. And I didn't altogether blame him. He owed years of service in exchange for his medical school tuition. Therefore, he was cautious. Therefore, he was an ally whose wishes we had to respect. Carbone fell and hit his head, I said. It's a closed case. Pure accident. Very unfortunate for all concerned. But I held the crowbar a little higher. I think this is what he hit his head on, I said. Three times? Well, maybe he bounced. Maybe there were dead twigs under the leaves, made the ground a little springy like a trampoline. The doctor nodded. Terrain can be like that this time of year. Lethal, I said. I lowered the crowbar again, waited. Why'd you bring it here? The doctor asked. There might be an issue of contributory negligence, I said. Whoever left it lying around for Carbone to fall on might need a reprimand. The doctor nodded again. Littering is a grave offense. In this man's army, I said. What do you want me to do? Nothing, I said. We're here to help you out, is all. With it being a closed case, we figured you wouldn't want to clutter your place up with those plaster casts you made of the wound site. We figured we could haul them to the trash for you. The doctor nodded for a third time. You could do that, he said. It would save me a trip. He paused for a long moment. Then he cleared the file away from in front of him and opened some drawers and laid sheets of clean white paper on the desktop and arranged half a dozen glass microscope slides on the paper. That thing looks heavy, he said to me. It is, I said. Maybe you should put it down. Take the weight off your shoulder. Is that medical advice? Oh, you don't want ligament damage. Where should I put it down? Any flat surface you can find. I stepped forward and laid the crowbar gently on his desk, on top of the paper and the glass slides. Unhooked my bootlace and picked the knot out of it. Squatted down and threaded it back through the eyelets. Tightened it up and tied it off. I looked up in time to see the doctor move a microscope slide. He picked it up and scraped it against the end of the crowbar where it was matted with blood and hair. Damn, he said. I got this slide all dirty. Very careless of me. He made the exact same error with five more slides. Are we interested in fingerprints? He said. I shook my head. We're assuming gloves. Well, we should check, I think. Contributory negligence is a serious matter. He opened another drawer and peeled a latex glove out of a box and snapped it on his hand. It made a tiny cloud of talcum dust. Then he picked the crowbar up and carried it out of the room. He came back less than 10 minutes later. He still had his glove on. The crowbar was washed clean. The black paint gleamed. It looked indistinguishable from new. No prints, he said. He put the crowbar down on his chair and pulled a file drawer and came out with a pale brown cardboard box, opened it up and took out two chalk-white plaster casts. Both were about 6 inches long, and both had Carbone handwritten in black ink on the underside. One was a positive, formed by pressing wet plaster into the wound. The other was a negative, formed by molding more plaster over the positive. The negative showed the shape of the wound the weapon had made, and therefore the positive showed the shape of the weapon itself. The doctor put the positive on the chair next to the crowbar, lined them up, parallel. The cast was about 6 inches long. It was white and a little pitted from the molding process, but was otherwise identical to the smooth black iron. Absolutely identical. Same section, same thickness, same contours. Then the doctor put the negative on the desk. It was a little bigger than the positive, and a little messier. It was an exact replica of the back of Carbone's shattered head. The doctor picked up the crowbar, hefted it in his hand, lined it up speculatively, brought it down very slowly. One for the first blow, then two for the second, then three for the last. He touched it to the plaster. The third and final wound was the best defined. It was a clear 3/4-inch trench in the plaster, and the crowbar fitted it perfectly. "I'll check on the blood and the hair," the doctor said. "Not that we don't already know what the results will be." He lifted the crowbar out of the plaster and tried it again. It went in again, precisely and deep. He lifted it out and balanced it across his open palms like he was weighing it. Then he grasped it by the straighter end and swung it like a batter going after a high fastball. He swung it again, harder, a compact, violent stroke. It looked big in his hands. Big and a little heavy for him, a little out of control. "Very strong man," he said. "Vicious swing. Big, tall guy, right-handed, physically very fit. But that describes a lot of people on this post, I guess." "There was no guy," I said. "Carbone fell and hit his head." The doctor smiled briefly and balanced the bar across his palms again. "It's handsome in its way," he said. "Does that sound strange?" I knew what he meant. It was a nice piece of steel, and it was everything it needed to be, and nothing it didn't. Like a Colt Detective Special, or a K-bar, or a cockroach. He slid it inside a long steel drawer. The metals scraped one on the other, and then boomed faintly when he let it go and dropped it the final inch. "I'll keep it here," he said, "if you like. Safer that way." "Okay," I said. He closed the drawer. "Are you right-handed?" he asked me. "Yes," I said, "I am." "Colonel Willard told me you did it," he said, "but I didn't believe him." "Why not?" "You were very surprised when you saw who it was. When I put his face back on, you had a definite physical reaction. People can't fake that sort of thing." "Did you tell Willard that?" The doctor nodded. "He found it inconvenient, but it didn't really deflect him, and I'm sure he's already developed a theory to explain it away." "I'll watch my back," I said. "Some Delta sergeants came to see me, too. There are rumors starting. I think you should watch your back very carefully." "I plan to," I said. "Very carefully," the doctor said. Summer and I got back in the Humvee. She fired it up and put it in gear and sat with her foot on the brake. "Quartermaster," I said.
"It wasn't a military issue," she said.
"It looked expensive," I said. "Expensive enough for the Pentagon, maybe."
"It would have been green."
I nodded. "Probably. But we should still check. Sooner or later, we're going to need all our ducks in a row." She took her foot off the brake and headed for the quartermaster building. She'd been a bird much longer than me, and she knew where everything was. She parked again in front of the usual type of warehouse. I knew there'd be a long counter inside with massive off-limits storage areas behind it. There would be huge bales of clothing, tires, blankets, mess kits, and trenching tools, equipment of every kind. We went in and found a young guy in new BDUs behind the counter. He was a cheerful, corn-fed country boy. He looked like he was working in his dad's hardware store, and he looked like it was his life's ambition. He was enthusiastic. I told him we were interested in construction equipment. He opened a manual the size of 8 phone books, found the correct section, I asked him to find listings for crowbars. He licked his forefinger and turned pages and found two entries. Pry bar general issue, long, claw on one end, and then crowbar general issue, short, claw on both ends. I asked him to show us an example of the latter. He went away and disappeared among the tall stacks. We waited, breathed in the unique quartermaster smell of old dust and new rubber and damp cotton twill. He came back after 5 long minutes with a GI crowbar, laid it down on the counter in front of us. It landed with a heavy thump. Summer had been right. It was painted olive green, and it was a completely different item from the one we'd just left in the pathologist's office. Different section, 6 inches shorter, slightly thinner, slightly different curves. It looked carefully designed. It was probably a perfect example of the way the Army does things. Years ago, it had probably been the 99th item on someone's re-equipment agenda. A subcommittee would have been formed with expert input from survivors of the old construction battalions. A specification would have been drawn up concerning length and weight and durability. Metal fatigue would have been investigated. Arenas of likely use would have been considered. Brittleness in the frozen winters of northern Europe would have been evaluated. Malleability in the severe heat of the equator would have been taken into account. Detailed drawings would have been made. Then tenders would have gone out. Mills all over Pennsylvania and Alabama would have priced the job. Prototypes would have been forged. They would have been tested, exhaustively. One and only one winner would have been approved. Paint would have been supplied, and the thickness and uniformity of its application would have been specified and carefully monitored. Then the whole business would have been completely forgotten. But the product of all those long months of deliberation was still coming through, thousands of units a year, needed or not. "Thanks, soldier," I said.
"You need to take it?"
the kid asked. "I just needed to see it," I said. We went back to my office. It was mid-morning, a dull day, and I felt aimless. So far, the new decade wasn't doing much for me. I wasn't a huge fan of the 1990s yet, at that point, 6 days in.
"Are you going to write the accident report?"
Summer asked. "For Willard?" "Not yet."
"He'll expect it today."
I nodded. "I know, but I'm going to make him ask one more time."
"Why?"
"I guess because it's a fascinating experience, like watching maggots writhing around in something that died."
"What died?"
"My enthusiasm for getting out of bed in the morning."
"One bad apple,"
she said,
"doesn't mean much."
"Maybe," I said, "if it is just one." She said nothing. "Crowbars," I said. "We got 2 separate cases with crowbars, and I don't like coincidences, but I can't see how they can be connected. There's no way to join them up. Carbone was 1,000,000 miles from Mrs. Kramer in every way imaginable. They were in completely different worlds."
"Vassil and Kuma joined them up," she said. "They had an interest in something that could have been in Mrs. Kramer's house, and they were here at Bird the night Carbone was killed."
I nodded. "That's what's driving me crazy. It's a perfect connection, except it isn't. They took one call in D.C. They were too far from Green Valley to do anything to Mrs. Kramer themselves, and they didn't call anyone from the hotel. Then they were here the night Carbone died, but they were in the O Club with 12 witnesses the whole time eating steak and fish."
"First time they were here, they had a driver, Major Marshall, remember? But the second time they were on their own. That feels a little clandestine to me. Like they were here for a secret reason."
"Nothing very secret about hanging around in the O Club bar and then eating in the O Club dining room. They weren't out of sight for 1 minute all night long."
"But why didn't they have their driver? Why come on their own? I assume Marshall was at the funeral with them, but they chose to drive more than 300 miles by themselves? And more than 300 back?"
"Maybe Marshall was unavailable," I said.
"He's their blue-eyed boy," she said. "He's available when they say so."
"Why'd they come here at all? It's a very long way for a very average dinner."
"They came for the briefcase, Reacher. Norton's wrong. She must be. Someone gave it to him. They left with it.
I don't think Norton's wrong. She convinced me.
Then maybe they picked it up in the parking lot. Norton wouldn't have seen that. I assume she didn't go out there in the cold and wave them off. But they left with it for sure. Why else would they be happy to fly back to Germany?
Maybe they just gave up on it. They were due back in Germany anyway. They couldn't stay here forever. They got Kramer's command to fight over. Summer said nothing.